Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, coming to you with a Sunday strategy session. As we're sort of getting into the offseason and we're going to be getting more player-specific news, and whether that's, you know, mini-camp reports, OTAs, workout reports, you know, hype pieces, training camp, tidbits, right, from reporters or whatnot. I think it's really important to keep in mind, as we're sort of processing this information, two theories and basically one practice tip. So the two theories that I have on player analysis are, number one, it's what I consider the Lamar Miller theory. Okay, so the Lamar Miller theory is, if you go back, Lamar Miller, if you've been playing a while, Lamar Miller was running back. He was with Miami. And there was a constant cry from the dynasty community, the fantasy community in general. Hey, listen, like, he's not getting enough. Like, this is three down efficiency type running back, right? He's basically a three down guy. He's not playing enough, right? He's not getting enough opportunity. He needs more opportunity. You know, not enough. He's too much in a timeshare. Look at all the stuff that he could do if they just gave him the ball more, right? That sort of, he should be given more of an opportunity than he's getting because he's better, and he will be that good, if not better, when he has a full opportunity. And for Lamar Miller, this went on for a couple of years. This went on, and they were working in a timeshare with him, didn't really give him a ton of work. He was leading the backfield, but not getting a dominant workload. He wasn't a workhorse guy. And if you just look back to 2015, 194 attempts, 49 for Jay Ajayi, 31 for Jonas Gray, Damian Williams had 16, right? So he had a good chunk, but it wasn't, you know, they had 344 carries. He had 194 of them, you know, so not a huge, huge amount of that. Some of that was some quarterback stuff in there. They ran it a fair amount with a guy like Jarvis Landry as well. So maybe, you know, 60, 65%, somewhere in that range of the running back position touches. People were like, hey, he should be getting more. You know, this went on for a couple of years. So he goes and, and this was, you know, maybe it wasn't a great staff either. They had Philbin Bill Lazor was the offensive coordinator, right? So you sort of had, hey, these criticisms. You know, Daniel Thomas had, you go back to 2014, Daniel Thomas had 44 carries. Damian Williams had 36 carries. Knowshon Moreno had 31. And Lamar Miller had 216. So he basically had 216 out of a team total of 399. So when you sort of look at it, you're like, man, it's just not giving him a ton of that work share, right? He should be getting more at that. In that year, he ran for 5.1 yards per attempt, only 13.5 attempts per game. So you want to see more of it, right? Want to get up there. And, you know, in the following year too, in the 2015 season, which I read to you, for 4.5 yards per attempt. And that's with Ajayi getting, you know, that's only 12.1 a game. In terms of attempts, but that's with Ajayi getting 5.4 and Jonas Gray getting 5.2, right? So you sort of have these other guys getting this workload, and there's a big outcry from the dynasty community like, hey, we need more. Ultimately, what happens? Well, Lamar Miller ends up with the Houston Texans, signs a deal there, right? And what happens? 268 in terms of touches and his first year there. Yes, we got what we wanted. 4.0 yards per attempt. Only 5 touchdowns. That's down from 8 the prior 2 years. Right? So all that hope. 19.1 attempts per game. Yes, we got exactly what we wanted. Oh, wait. No, we didn't. Right? And that's one of those things where I sort of look at that and I say, hey, listen, these franchises, again, it's the 1% theory, right? We know maybe 1% about these guys' daily lives in terms of, you know, what we see on tape, what we sort of get from practice. And there's so much more to them that we just don't know. We don't know what they do in the meeting room. We don't know how they know the playbook. We don't know all of those things. And so this creates sort of an issue where we're seeing incomplete information, and teams are acting on much more complete information and making decisions that to us seem suboptimal. But then when we get the full reveal, which was Lamar Miller going to Houston, we sort of see, hey, listen, it doesn't really work out. Now, is there other things going on? Sure. You know, was the offense as good? Maybe not. But, right, he gets the 19.1 attempts per game, and it's a big downtick in efficiency, and everyone's like, ah, you know, this isn't what we signed up for, right? We wanted more. We got more, and it's not what we wanted. So, you know, that year, too, down from 7.0 yards per target on 57 targets. Like, man, he's got more to offer. You know, he goes, gets the uptick in the usage there, but a downtick in the passing game usage. 39 targets in 2016. That's the first year with Houston, right? So he gets 19.1 attempts per game. He gets, you know, targets per game. He's getting over 2, and all of a sudden, you know, almost 3. So all of a sudden, big downtick in efficiency, right? Down to 4.8 yards per target. Now, was there other stuff going on? Sure. But it's a cautionary note, right? Just because we're sort of hoping and thinking like, hey, this player's got more to offer. A lot of times there's information there that we don't necessarily know. The flip side of that is the Jamal Williams, right? Or even another good example of this is actually the Malcolm Brown theory, right? I use Jamal Williams just because he's a more popular name. People sort of know him. And what's everyone's thought on him? Like, everyone thinks he's not very good, right? Because he's not as athletic as Aaron Jones, or he's not as athletic as DeAndre Swift. But you know what he does? Everything really well, or well enough. He's like very competent basically at everything. And so what happens? He gets more opportunities than people otherwise think he warrants. And as a result of that, you sort of are in this situation where he's basically an overachiever in people's minds, or, you know, he's basically undeserving of the opportunity that he's getting. And in reality, he's actually overachieving. Why? Well, because of all that other information that we don't know about him, like, he actually checks all those boxes. Where a guy like Lamar Miller, that information we don't know, right? That's a lot of the question that I have about a guy like CeeDee Lamb right now, is a lot of that information that we don't know points at us in a direction of, if he was as good as we thought if he was as good as everyone thought he is, then we would be in a situation where he'd be getting a lot more usage. And we're not. Why? Right. So that's the thing. And this, you know, popped up recently with some Irv Smith stuff, right? Irv Smith, everyone's thinking, you know, he's going to make a huge leap forward. And all of a sudden, Tyler Conklin's getting all of the, the buzz, right? And Mike Zimmer's like, hey, you know, listen, we're not going to feature Irv Smith in a bigger role than he had last year, right? We're just going to sort of play him in the role that he had last year. And there's a big outcry from the community. Well, is it Mike Zimmer is an idiot? Is it Mike Zimmer's coaches don't know what they're doing, right? Is it the new, is it the younger Kubiak just not, you know, he's a buffoon, he doesn't know what he's talking about? Or is it, hey, listen, like, we are in possession of a lot of incomplete data. They have much more complete data that we just don't know. And a lot of times we don't know it. And that means what we do know, their decision looks suboptimal because they're making their decision based on information that they know that we don't. And this is something that would happen all the time. And it happens all the time in your other life, right? Where if it's, you know, if you just think about this, if you just sort of take it out of the football context for a second, just think like, hey, why is that guy with her? Or why is that girl, or, you know, why is that woman dating him? Be like, you know, he's a lot better, you know, she's a lot better looking than he is. Like, you know, she could do a lot better. Well, in reality, you don't know that, like, the inner dynamics there. Right, you don't know if it's spiritual, like if it's money related, if it's, you know, what she's looking for, right? You don't necessarily know that, and so as a result, you get these what look like inefficiencies, and you're like, hey, you know, these two don't really look like a match. I don't know what she sees in him, But what she sees in him is exactly what she wants in a partner, right? And to everyone else, it looks stupid, and that happens. This would happen all the time in my old job, or well, I guess my other job now. But we would have cases where I would make a decision about a case, and it would look very counterintuitive, and it would be, you know, it would be based on information that other people didn't have, right? So it would be, you know, we would have, you know, maybe a small piece of the video for an incident would be public, right? It would be in the media or whatnot, but it was maybe a 10-second shot of a half-hour-long encounter, and in the 10-second shot, hey, it looks like it's really cut and dry. But when you sort of pan out a little bit and you sort of get the full, you know, the half hour interaction, these two people arguing, you know, there was, you know, the victim threw the first punch, you know, the victim brandished a gun, the victim, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden he's the one that gets beat up and it looks really bad on camera. But in reality, that didn't show the full interaction. It didn't show the full facts. And I then make a decision, you know, what I might dismiss the case. Listen, the guy was acting in self-defense. And you're like, well, what do you mean? He's beating the heck out of the guy. Well, you didn't see the prior 28 minutes where, you know, the guy's, you know, fighting with him and there's six of his buddies there and, you know, or whatever, right? You don't know the full facts or where they, you know, they hunted him down and found him in a dark alley. And then all of a sudden, you know, someone pulls out a video camera and, you know, turnabout's fair play and the guy gets, you know, the stalker gets beat up and all of a sudden, right, it looks really, really bad, but people don't know the full story of it. And as a result, the conclusion that was come to, which was, hey, the guy was acting in self-defense, it looks totally counterintuitive. These things happen in life all the time. And so it shouldn't be surprising, you know, in your workplace, right? How does this guy constantly get ahead, right? This guy's an idiot. How does this guy get ahead? Or, you know, this guy is constantly, you know, getting passed over, right? Well, maybe there's more to the story. And I think a lot of times we don't necessarily, you know, we think we kind of know better. And sometimes maybe we do, right? Maybe teams do make suboptimal decisions. But keep it with a really healthy dose of skepticism when you sort of see the complaints about, hey, player usage, player volume, player opportunity, not getting what they deserve. You know, not the teams are doing the stupid thing like, hey, they should force feed Irv Smith 110 targets. Well, maybe they don't trust him to do that. Right? Maybe they know that he can't run a complete route tree. Maybe they know he's only really capable of separating on, you know, play action, whatever, right? All of those things, we're not privy to that information that goes into it, but you do have to take a very, I think, sobered and, you know, and realistic view that they are in possession of better information than we are. So I think that's one thing to really think about, you know. So the Jamal Williams theory, obviously this guy keeps overperforming, like you should kind of think about that in terms of like, hey, there's probably stuff there that he really is getting an opportunity because he's better, right? Because there's stuff that to him that if he's a good teammate or he constantly knows his assignments or you can really trust him to do all this stuff, or it's position flexibility, it's formation flexibility. Malcolm Brown's another example of this, right? We keep getting positive affirmation on Malcolm Brown. We've seen him have interest from multiple teams. We've seen, you know, him be tendered. We've seen him, you know, get an offer from a different team. We've seen the Rams keep him. We see him then end up in free agency and be signed by another team. So now we know that basically three out of the 32 teams in the NFL have a pretty high view of Malcolm Brown. And like that's information that we don't get that a ton. It's actually kind of a unique case. You don't get a ton of that information, especially with like concrete stuff. You sort of get a lot of the fluffy stuff like, oh, this guy had, you know, 17 suitors in free agency. Like we don't really know that. With Malcolm Brown, we know that, right? We absolutely know that. We got a lot of confirmation on that. And so that's one, and Jamal Williams is a great example of it too, right? Multiple different coaching staffs now are sort of saying, hey, listen, we really like what he offers. And, you know, when you're sort of on the flip side of that and, you know, multiple coaching staffs are saying something about a player that seems irrational to us, but we're sort of looking at it and thinking, hey, you know, this doesn't make a ton of sense. They should use this guy more. When you're getting multiple sources of information saying the same thing about a player, you kind of have to update your hunch, your suspicion, all that stuff, because it probably has a relevant meaning. So that's the Jamal Williams theory. That's the Lamar Miller theory. And that sort of brings back to thinking about base rates, right? And so one of the things that I really think about in this time of year is, you know, I've seen people put out on Twitter like, hey, this undrafted free agent, right, he's got a better claim to the job than the guy drafted in the fourth round. And you have to take a pretty healthy dose of base rates and think about a lot of this information. So what do I mean by that? Like, if I'm sort of thinking about players and, you know, if I'm thinking about, you know, fourth round tight end versus an undrafted guy, fourth round tight end might be like 20, 25%. I just use 25. We think the base rate's about 25%, depending on what we want to measure. But let's say it's about 25%. Just using this as an example. You know, let's say we think the guy's not quite that good. Well, you dock him down a little bit, right? So maybe instead of 25, it's, you know, we think that he's more like a 10% shot guy, right? Well, I might think that that's, you know, that might be my adjustment that I make. Hey, I think he's a 10% guy. You know, I usually use a 2/3, 1/3 type analysis. So that sort of keeps me on the right track in terms of, you know, keeps me from doing something really drastic. So I might say, hey, listen, it's a 25% base rate. I'll sort of take 2/3 of that, and then I'll adjust and I'll take the other third of the equation and I'll make that 10%, right? So that way I'll update it. And instead of it being 25%, which is the base rate, I'll sort of incorporate my other theory, which is, hey, this guy's not quite as good, or I've got some updated information. I'll sort of take that, you know, that 10% number, I'll combine them together. You know, I'll give it 2/3 of the weight to the actual base rate. I'll sort of incorporate my opinion as a third of that number. And then I come out with about 20%. And that's sort of my updated hit rate. Again, so now I'm below sort of the base rate. I've sort of moved it a little bit, but I'm sort of keeping myself in the range of, you know, the reality. How do I sort of do this on a specific news by news basis, right? Because that's a lot of what we think. You know, all of a sudden we got a really crummy view of Travis Etienne because we think Urban Meyer's a goof, and, you know, they don't even want to play him at running back, or they're going to play, you know, all these theories, I guess, that are moving around his value. Well, even if I sort of take that, right, and I say, all right, he's an 80% base rate guy. Well, maybe I think like he's got a 60% chance of hitting. So I sort of incorporate the 80%, you know, a third of the 80%, or 2/3 of the 80%, and with a third of the 60%, and I sort of come to a number right around, right around 70% or so, right? A little bit more than that. And so that would sort of be my sort of updated thought on the information. I will say, though, keep it in mind of, right, one piece of information shouldn't move your number very much. Maybe it moves it a little bit. Maybe it moves it up, just slightly, but just keep that in mind. Like, don't make huge moves based on, so much of it is explained by base rates. So much of it is explained by the market value. That individual news story is like, don't get spooked by it, right? And if people are going to get spooked by it, and it's going to move a player off significantly, off his base rate, significantly off his market rate, his ADP, his implied hit rates, and all that stuff, right? That becomes a buying situation. So just keep those things all in mind. Again, we don't tend to be overreactive to news, but I just think that's a really good way to sort of think about and process this information, and then really update your prior and give yourself the most optimized way to look at the information. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Sunday Strategy Session. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we'll talk again very soon.